Welcome to the Jockey Club On the Lead podcast. I'm Carolyn Conley. This is the platform where we get to know the powerful products and services offered by the Jockey Club's companies. We will also learn more about the initiatives supported by the Jockey Club, and we'll discuss the most important issues affecting the sport of thoroughbred horse racing. Hi, I'm Carolyn Conley, and welcome to the Jockey Club's On the Lead podcast. Today, I will be speaking with Rick Bailey, Registrar of the Jockey Club. Hi, Rick. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're very welcome, Carolyn.
It's great to have you here. And it seems people think the Jockey Club is either about jockeys or is about the regulatory body for thoroughbred racing. Explain what the Jockey Club really is.
So the Jockey Club was founded in 1894 as the breed registry for North American thoroughbreds. And in the past 40 years or so, the Jockey Club has expanded the role a good bit to include various companies, including an information company, a technology company, as well as racing services, and even a majority ownership in the Blood Horse magazine. But in the beginning, and for the first 85 years or so, operating the stud book was the primary function, and we still maintain that role in the thoroughbred industry.
Do you register or license owners as well?
Not really in a true sense. Licensing for racehorse owners is actually done by the state racing commissions and the various states that conduct racing. In a sense, we have an account for many of our customers, very much like think of about like a Netflix account or an account you might have with your bank for our customers that transact business with us online.
I can relate to that. I have a Conley Bloodstock account and I can go in and look at the registration papers that are in my name or in my account.
Exactly. Yeah, it's what's called a digital certificate manager these days. Owners or their agents will have possession of a digital certificate within their Jockey Club registry account.
It's very handy and makes life a lot easier when you're buying and selling horses, that's for sure. Well, let's walk through the steps of registering a thoroughbred with the Jockey Club. When does interaction with the Jockey Club begin?
So it actually begins before a foal is even born. After the breeding season occurs, the stallion managers will submit what's called a report of mares bred to the registry office. And that report it's pretty simple. It's a listing of the stallion and each mare that he covered during that breeding season, as well as the last cover dates. So that's the beginning of the registration process. And again, that's even before the foals are born.
And then what happens when the foal's actually born?
So within 30 days of the birth of a foal, the breeder or the foaling farm will submit what's called a live foal report to the registry office. And we'll take the information that's on that live foal report, and we will, when the foals are about, say, 2.5 to 3 months old, we'll send out a registration application kit that includes the genetic sampling portion of the kit or the hair sample, let's call it. And that sample is submitted to a laboratory to do DNA testing. And the purpose of that DNA test is to parentage verify the foal. So each foal, each thoroughbred that's registered with the Jockey Club is DNA tested and parentage verified against the DNA type for its reported sire and dam.
So if breeders submit these DNA samples for parentage testing of foals, how often does the test actually show that the parentage is incorrect?
It's pretty rare. It's one of those 0.5% deals. But there's probably at least 30 or 40 true parentage exclusions in a year. And of those, some of them are just clerical mistakes where a hair sample is dropped into the wrong envelope, let's say. But there are truly a handful of times each year where foals have become switched with one another, or perhaps a dominant mare has taken possession of, let's call it, of a foal that's perhaps a little stronger than the foal that she gave birth to. So again, pretty rare, but very important that we get the parentage correct on registered thoroughbreds.
That's really interesting about the mare. How long does an owner have to register their foal?
The initial requirement is to register the foal within 1 year from its actual foaling date. So if you have a baby that's born on April 10th of this year, you'll have until April 10th of next year to register that foal at the original fee. After that, you can register foals in their yearling year or two-year-old year, or even three and up, but the fee is increased each year after that.
So as the registrar, then what is your role in all of this?
So the registrar's role is really to oversee the stud book operation, to make sure that we're doing an efficient job within the registry office, and to do a top-notch job with respect to recording parentage, recording the genetic samples of each of the foals, as well as the markings. If you might think about, you know, part of that registration process is that the registry office receives photographs of each foal each registration application includes a set of photographs. So an important part of what we're doing is recording those markings. Think about the white markings you see on a horse's face or on their legs. That information is all captured and recorded right on the front side of the registration certificate, so that there's a good description of each thoroughbred that gets registered as they go to the sales or to the racetrack.
And even all the cowlicks and things, I've noticed how detailed it gets.
Exactly. We're very detailed recording that information. The cowlicks become really important on foals with no white markings, as an example.
Right. So what innovations have taken place within the registry over the past few years?
Well, there's been a good number of innovations. If you go back a ways longer, if you go back about to the mid-90s, pretty early on, we started taking information over the internet through our interactive registration system. And that was a pretty bold change in the mid-90s to start accepting information, you know, over the internet as opposed to paper forms. More recently, in 2017, microchips became a requirement for thoroughbred registration. So every foal that gets registered with us now, there's a chip number that's recorded on the registration certificate, and that chip gets implanted into the horse on the left side of the neck. And that, of course, serves as a major help in the identification process of thoroughbreds, again, as they go to the sales, to the racetrack, and even post-racing. And then I would say even more recent than that, we've switched from paper certificates to digital certificates. That began with the foal crop of 2018. So every thoroughbred we register now, as opposed to what used to be called the papers, they now get a digital certificate of foal registration that still moves with the horse, much like the paper certificate did, but it can be done in a matter of seconds on an online account. And the real beauty of it, I guess, is that those digital certificates should never get lost, as opposed to the paper certificates that in some cases, the poor van driver was responsible for delivering here and there.
Or you put some good insurance on your FedEx. Because it does take something to replace them. So that's a wonderful innovation. And the microchips are so helpful too with video endoscopy for the horse sales. And you can confirm right there that it is that horse with the microchip number. So how are these innovations working and what other ways are you hoping people put them to use?
So it's gone rather well with, as with any change, it wasn't easy in the beginning. But as the owners and breeders have gotten more acquainted with the changes, it's really gone rather well. The digital certificates have been particularly well received. And if you think about it, the first year that they became necessarily at the racetrack was the first COVID year. So if you remember back to the early days of COVID, we were all being told, be careful about touching cash and paper certificates handed from one owner or one farm to another, and from, being handled by the hundreds, if not thousands, by sales companies. you know, it was a definite improvement there that we were able to trade those certificates around in a digital fashion as opposed to everybody handling paper.
Yep. And I think you mentioned something when we spoke before too about broodmares going to the breeding shed and ways of confirming them.
Exactly. So we see that as probably the next innovation would be the ability for stud farms, as an example, might be able to read the chip number and have that chip number interface with our database in the form of a phone app or a tablet, and we would be able to display photographs of such a broodmare in those cases. It might be the registration photos from the time when the horse was first registered, or it could be from her time with the Thoroughbred Racing Protective Bureau when photographs are taken as part of their digital tattoo process.
That's right alongside the horse ID process at the racetrack, correct?
Exactly. It occurs prior to the horse racing, and probably 99% of the time at least. There's a tattoo technician that and if you went back 4 or 5 years ago, they would have been physically tattooing the horse, whereas now they take a digital sort of, let's call it a seal of approval that they place onto the jockey club certificate, the digital certificate. And so that gives the assurance that horse was identified properly, its microchip number and markings checked out prior to the horse showing up in the paddock on race day.
Rick, what advice would you give someone just starting out with a mare or stallion heading to the breeding shed? Perhaps an organization they should join or websites they should visit?
Yeah, like with most any business, you know, get good advice up front, you know, have a plan. From a racehorse perspective, OwnerView is a site that I would recommend. The Jockey Club is affiliated with that, obviously, but the OwnerView site is excellent for broodmare owners or stallion owners. When it comes to dealing with the Jockey Club and the stud book office, I would say you're always better off to give us a call up front. If you have questions, we maintain a customer service line and they do an excellent job of answering questions. So if there's any questions or concern with as far as registration requirements go, you know, check with us up front. And then like in any business, you know, get good advice on the front end and have a good business plan, obviously.
And I found your customer service people to be extremely friendly, and no question is too basic or too simple. They're so gracious.
Thank you. Thank you. We take a lot of pride in it. And it's one thing that we've done. If you go back to 1988, when the registry office first moved from New York to Lexington, the customer service has been a big part of that. And we still have people here locally that answer the phone, you know, usually within 15, 20 seconds of a call, and you should be able to get helpful information. And if we can't provide it, we can usually direct you to the right place.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Is there anything else about the registry you'd like people to know?
I would say just to be aware that the Jockey Club, you know, is a lot more these days than just the breed registry. We do a lot of industry support, things like the Thoroughbred Incentive Program and funding for some of the Thoroughbred aftercare organizations. The Jockey Club as a whole plays a big part in those items and others as well.
And I think one of the great pleasures in breeding and owning racehorses is the opportunity to name them. So let's talk about the rules for naming.
So there's some basic rules. You can't use more than 18 characters or spaces. You can't reuse names for historically important horses. So we'll never have another, you know, Secretariat or Justify or Man of War. Names like that are permanently protected. But there is a process where they free up over time. The main rule that comes into play most often with that is once a thoroughbred gets to the age of 11 or older, and we see 5 years of inactivity on both the breeding side and the racing side, then that name is very likely to become available again for reuse. So we have a good number of people that anxiously await that process in late December, looking for those names to free up for names that perhaps fit their pedigrees for upcoming foals.
Nice. What about those owners who sometimes try to submit names that are just a little over the top or maybe even obscene?
Oh, we don't have any of those. No, it's honestly, it's there are a few, but they're few and far between. It's really rare. I would say 99.8% of our customers do a good job. They spend a lot of time with names. You know, it's interesting to see the different strategies, let's call it, that owners use in order to try to get names that fit their horses. We've seen, you know, Claiborne Farm has their traditional short one word names. There's owners that name horses after various towns or cities in their states. You know, we've seen owners over the time that try to use all 18 characters. So it's really interesting to see what folks come up with for their own naming style, let's call it.
I like it. It's kind of like branding. You know, it's a Claiborne horse if it's one syllable or, you know, that sort of thing. But I tried to name a filly Breakfast at Tiffany's. She's out of a mare named Window Shopper, and it was rejected. Something about licensing.
Yeah, if it's a name that has clear commercial significance, those names are unavailable.
Well, one final question, Rick. What are a few of your favorite names that have been approved over the years for thoroughbreds?
So I enjoy seeing the names that tie to both sides of the pedigree. For example, a horse named Multiple Choice, who's by the stallion Mount Livermore out of Lady of Choice. So I'll emphasize more in Mount Livermore and Choice in Lady of Choice, and you get Multiple Choice. We had a foal a few years back named Crop Circle, who was by Perfect Circle out of the mare Lost in the Weeds. So I thought that was a really good use of using both sides of the pedigree. And then you see names like, you know, by certain stallions where there's, you know, just perfect fits for certain stallions. So one of the most popular stallions now is Constitution, and among his foals are Independence Hall, Liberty Bell, and the good horse Tis the Law that was racing just a couple of years ago. And the other thing that I see and we've noticed over the years is, you know, it ties to what's going on in the world sometimes, or popular movies or TV shows. We had a bunch of Seinfeld names a few years back. One of my favorite movies when I was growing up was The Sting, the famous movie with that I believe won the Picture of the Year. And that, you know, that movie had, you know, racehorses and horse names that played a part in the movie. One of those was Blue Note, and that horse was used in recent years. And the other one that came into play late in the movie that was the one that they actually pulled off the sting with was a horse named Lucky Dan. So somebody in recent years used Lucky Dan. And then just one other example, one of my favorites that, again, ties to a movie. In the movie Caddyshack, one of the characters was Judge Smells. And there was a good racehorse by that name, Judge Smells, a few years back. And one of his foals, he went to stand at stud, and one of his foals is named Odor in the Court. So clever use for a foal by Judge Smells.
Fun. Well, good stuff. Thank you so much, Rick, for taking the time today to join us on the On the Lead podcast. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Carolyn. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of On the Lead. Please be sure to visit the Jockey Club website at jockeyclub.com to learn more about the Jockey Club, its companies, and its supported initiatives. You can also follow the Jockey Club on Facebook and Twitter. We look forward to you joining us next time.